You're listening to My 1-2-3 Cents with Kevin Huntsberger. Bee! Oh, and I'm the world's sweetest man, Gentleman Jervis. I actually really like your podcast. I hope you keep it up. You're doing great work.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Everyone, welcome to episode 294 of My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast, and it is a new month. And we are talking with Tyler Heath Hatton of Stride Pro Wrestling, 2 is Greater Than 1. And I have to start off by saying the former Stride Pro Wrestling Legacy Champion dropping the championship to B-Rad very recently on Stride Pro Wrestling Resurgence. Tyler, welcome back to the show. And it's good to have Stride back out there in the stratosphere, so to speak.
It's exciting. You know, when this whole COVID started, I'm not gonna lie, I wasn't watching any of the new stuff. I'd record it, but I wouldn't watch it. And I mean, I watched WrestleMania, but I didn't feel like I watched it like I wanted to. So I'd kind of just taken a break from wrestling, and I, you know, really started to miss it. And so I'm really glad to have Stride back, kind of my baby, my wrestling that I missed and I enjoy.
Now, obviously, and I think we touched on this a little bit last month, but we're doing shows without the crowd. And obviously watching it as a fan on WWE or AEW, even though they have some people kind of peppered in the audience now, but obviously with Stride, you know, other than a couple of people, it's been, you know, you don't have that cheer going on, that ruckus crowd. How is it now that you've done a couple of shows like this? You know, how is that for you? Because I'm assuming this is really kind of the first time you've been in a situation like this where there's not been an audience.
You know, I mean, to be honest, back in the early AAPW days, it felt like there was no
right. You know, Jason Spade said that the last time when I asked him about that too. So yeah. But how is it without having people there? You know, to cheer.
The air is different, and then people say it's adrenaline, your adrenaline's going. You know, when you're in front of a crowd, and now you can say that because you've performed and wrestled, you don't really feel the bumps. You don't really mm-hmm. feel the hits. You take them, and, you know, I mean, I could take a superplex in front of a crowd and not feel it. I mean, and that's the honest to God truth. But if I was to take one in practice or in an empty arena, by God, I feel it. And it would hurt. And so, I mean, we had practice Tuesday and I took a shoulder tackle and I felt it, you know, I'm feeling it today. So, it's a huge difference. But however, I've always, you know, we've had the wrestling school now for 4 years and I've taken bumps and had matches and stuff in front of with the trainees with no crowd. So it's, you know, it's to me, I'm kind of used to it just mm-hmm. because of practice. So some of the other guys that haven't done that in a long time, I'm sure it's a different feeling.
Yeah. And we are obviously still kind of following along with, or we are following along with what's going on with COVID-19 and the restrictions and the rules and whatnot. So, we're hoping that, you know, things are going to change. And I know that some of the plans that we had for some of the bigger shows are maybe not going to happen this year. I know, I believe the Miners, which was a big partner of ours last year, I believe their season's been canceled. So I'm assuming all that stuff is off the table, or is it?
I'm sure it is. I thought maybe they might want to do a show, but it's one of those things where, you know, with the restrictions, I mean, you don't really, I mean, I hate to say that, but nobody really knows what's okay and what's not okay. And, you know, and you see things and you see people suing and whatever. And, you know, to my understanding, you know, I could actually have a show. I could have an outside show. I could have an inside show. I know there's, you know, restaurants and stuff in town that somebody's having a band this weekend outside to play music. So I know I could have it. I don't know what's right and what's wrong. Mm-hmm. So, and I think a lot of places are like that, you know, like the Miners. And I would hate to have a show and somebody get it.
Right.
And have got it at my show and possibly gave it to somebody. I mean, and, you know, we all know me, you know, you're going to get it. That's my, you know, my mentality. So it's like, if somebody gives it to me, I'm like, okay, I'm going to get it anyway. So now I got it. So, but I don't want to be insensitive towards somebody else that doesn't want to get it and doesn't have the immune system or whatever to handle it. So, I'm trying to be responsible, and before I make any decisions, I usually call Kevin Hunsberger. So if there is anything that is done, just know that I have talked to Kevin about it first, and he's told me, go ahead. So if you're mad at me, be mad at Kevin as well, because I don't make decisions like this usually without asking Kevin, because he's the politically correct
one. Well, thanks for that, ringing endorsement. So, but obviously, you know, we hope to get back to the way things were. You know, we get messages, either personal message or, you know, private messages or people contacting the page. And I'm sure you get inundated with it even a lot more because you've got trainees that you're dealing with and, you know, the wrestlers as well who want to know and know what's going on. But I really think that technically two shows that we recorded, but they turned into three different episodes, have been really well received and really well done.
I mean, I don't know. I don't want to pat myself on the back, but I'm here. I am patting myself on the back. I've never done anything. You know, I've never wrote TV. And I mean, you have been on TV and done a production with AAPW and mm-hmm. Pro Wrestling Collision, and you were on the news. I mean, so, I mean, my little sheet that I typed up, I mean, it's not very professional, and it's probably not in the realm of what you would be used to. But, however, like, it all tied together, and it all went together, and you kind of saved me on that. But, I mean, I kind of think the stories have continued, and people seem to be liking it, and people were asking, you know, when's the next one coming, what's the deal, and, I mean, we recorded the thing on an iPhone, you know?
Right, right.
And so, I just, like, honestly, I mean, imagine if we had the production that APW had or whatever, you know,
right.
And, you know, I mean, it's pretty much just, I mean, not to toot our own horn, but I mean, it's pretty much a Tyler and Kevin production.
It really is. I mean, yeah, it's been fun, and, you know, obviously, like you said, if we had the equipment and the facilities and whatnot, it would be pretty amazing. But a lot of shout-outs to everyone who's been involved and has participated. And, you know, again, you know, the folks that own the building that we're in are being very generous with us as well right now, because for an indie show to make money, you have to have a crowd, and that's not happening right now. So we're able to still produce content and keep our name out there. And you know, I don't know many indie companies that are doing this kind of thing. You know, obviously we've seen it with WWE and AEW and Impact. But some of the bigger indie companies, you know, are just showing old shows and rehashing stuff. So kudos to you for kind of having the vision to move us forward and keep stride in the limelight.
Kudos to the talent, really, mm-hmm. because usually, you know, just a tidbit, I usually send out a card with all the participants, and I usually tell them all in advance what they're doing. However, and, you know, I mean, poor Roger, you know, I had a message to him, like, hey, I need you to come this day. now I need you to come this day. And then I forgot something. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I need you to come this day and this day as well. And, I mean, so, I mean, he literally had to come. You know, we did, I think, what, three different days?
I think he was there for all of them.
Yeah, and he literally had to be there for all of them. I mean, in hindsight, we probably should have recorded the first day, but I kept adding stuff. But, I mean, but the talent really doesn't know what they're doing until they get there, and they come anyway. And, you know, and so it's, you know, kudos to them because they've all came blindly and just been like, and that's what she said.
Jesus.
They've all been great and they've all followed along and they've all, you know, and then you guys did it one night without me. I had a softball tournament and you guys had to do it without me. And that's, you know, you guys knew exactly what I wanted and what to do. And so, and all of them have been one take.
Yeah.
So we haven't had to stop and record anything. I mean, it's all been, here we go.
It's live to tape. Well, it's been fun, and we say it every month. Follow Stride Pro Wrestling on social media to keep up with the very latest. And if you are listening from outside the area, check it out anyway. Check out the YouTube channel. This is also a way to perhaps introduce fans from around the country to what we're doing here in Southern Illinois with Stride Pro Wrestling.
It's time for school, but you're not going to be saved by this bell. Established in 2016, Stride Pro Wrestling trainers have put their years of experience to help train the next generation of professional wrestlers. Nearly a dozen students have graduated and are now making a name for themselves, not only here at Stride Pro Wrestling, but beyond. Our athletes aren't locked into any long-term contracts, so if you want to train, use your head and contact Stride Pro Wrestling today. It's training you'll flip for. So kick your future into high gear now.
The big topic today that I wanted to talk to Tyler more about, I wanted to save this until November for the 30-year anniversary, but since The Undertaker has kind of announced that he is at least seemingly retired now from wrestling, I wanted to talk to Tyler about The Undertaker and get more of his insight and vision and views of him. So you obviously, we've talked before too about the couple of times that you have been part of WWE and been kind of backstage and done some stuff. Now, a lot of this has happened post-Undertaker era as far as we only were seeing him at WrestleManias. So did you ever have the opportunity to meet The Undertaker?
He was there one time when I was there, but he was backstage, and I saw him. I did not talk to him. I did not, you know, shake his hand.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't. But, yes, I he has been there before when I was there. However, I did not, there are certain people that, you know, you didn't want to talk to or you didn't want to go up to.
Right,
and
right.
He kind of fit in that. At that point, he had fit in that category. And but, no, I've seen him in person, but I've never met him or said hi.
Well, you know, The Undertaker obviously debuts in the WWF back in November 1990. It's at Survivor Series. He's the mystery partner for Ted DiBiase's Million Dollar Team, along with Greg Valentine and the Honky Tonk Man. And he ends up eliminating the Coco Beware and Dusty Rhodes, and then he himself gets counted out. Huge debut, and I can remember I was a senior in high school when this happened, so this kind of puts it in perspective. Yeah. Tyler was probably in kindergarten, but, you know...
I wasn't even born yet.
Shut up. I know that's not true. So, I remember him, obviously, when he was Mean Mark Callis in WCW as part of the Skyscrapers, and even when he was wrestling in Texas, for a very brief stint, I remember seeing some of his matches. But, you know, the Undertaker gimmick itself, you know, to me, it was that cheesy 1990s, you know, the late 80s, the cartoonish era that you expected. I no way thought that 30 years later, much less, you know, maybe 3 months later, that we would still be talking about The Undertaker. So he obviously, something about that resonated with the office, resonated with the fans. And I would have to say, and I didn't really put this into perspective until I heard Jim Ross say it the other day, The Undertaker has had, like, the staying power and the, you know, he's just been that guy, and he's been that guy at the top of the card almost since day one with the WWF. And, you know, when we always talk about Hulk Hogan and Macho Man and Ric Flair and Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock, The Undertaker has to be in that conversation too. Do you agree?
Like, I was actually, it's weird you said that, because I was, when you texted me yesterday and told me what you wanted to talk about, I was mowing today, and I started, you know, trying to think about what I wanted to say. And to me, when I first started wrestling, I would say, it's, you know, everybody, oh, so you do MMA or you do boxing. No, mm-hmm. I do wrestling. And I would say, like, Hulk Hogan, John Cena type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like those two are the face of wrestling. If you say those, they know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I was thinking about that. So, you were talking about, you know, so when you were in middle school-ish, when wrestling is cool, probably fifth grade to freshman, you know, when, like, you know, I look at now, you know, teaching, that's kind of the age where wrestling is still kind of real to you and it's cool. And, like, yours was Hogan.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I mean, am I right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
yeah.
It was, that 100%. Was, that was the guy.
Yeah.
And so, to me, mine was, I mean, really, honestly, was Stone Cold.
Mm-hmm.
And so, at that time, if I was to say, you know, if I would imagine at that time, from probably 97 to 2002, if you said I'm a pro wrestler, you would say, like, Stone Cold Steve Austin, I would imagine.
Right.
And so, because he was so big. So, I think those three and Cena, they're the big ones. However, there are some that I think if you mention, they know. And I think the other ones are Macho Man, The Rock, and Undertaker.
Hmm.
Like, if you were to say those three people, and Sting.
Yeah.
Because you hear Sting a lot. And I think that they're about as on the cusp of that. Like, those are, like, I was trying to think all day, who could the other ones be? And I think if you were to say Undertaker to majority of people, they would associate him with wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Macho Man is in that. And I think, like I said, I think those were the three big ones because they were the larger than life personas. However, I think Sting is definitely up there. And I go, there was a kid one time on the bus, and it was a basketball game, and we were driving back from the game. And I was literally, it was a Monday night, and it was in eighth grade. I don't know why I remember this, but it was, for some reason, it was like, I think it was a Monday after Stone Cold had lost the belt, one of the shows, and we're driving back, and he had lost the title. And anyway, this kid on the bus was making fun of me because I wanted to know what happened on Raw. Well, of course, there was no video recordings or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're all on the bus and we're talking about it and we're driving home and I'm wanting to know what happened on Raw. And this kid was making fun of me. And he's like, oh, you like that wrestling crap, that fake stuff? And he said, like, who do you like? He's like, and I remember he said, the Underquacker. And he said, and he goes, Stung, the wrestler Stung. And he was being a smart aleck. But though I don't know why I remember that, but I remember him saying the Underquacker and Stung. And I think he made fun of The Rock. But I've never forgot that because he was making fun of me for liking wrestling. And I'm like, shut up, I like wrestling. But yeah, so that was kind of a long-winded answer. But yeah, that's my thoughts on The Undertaker.
So, you know, The Undertaker is one of those guys that I have, you know, I would never classify myself as a quote-unquote fan of his, but I would also say that I didn't dislike him. I've always respected his ability, and I actually enjoyed kind of that cartoonish presentation in the early days when he was larger than life. He was tombstoning people, putting them in the body bags with Paul Bearer, of course, as his manager. They were just kind of that perfect combination. And then the evolution of the character, because obviously for any character to stay relevant in the world of entertainment, much less wrestling, where it is a nonstop, you know, 52 weeks a year, there's new content coming out. So you obviously have to evolve with the times and change the character. But I really enjoyed probably that 1990 to about 94, 95, 96-ish run of his. You know, the feud with Mankind is my all-time favorite feud of his. But where were you as far as, like, the dead man at the very beginning versus, you know, I guess for lack of a better word, Biker Taker, where he's the American Badass, and then he's kind of had these evolutions throughout the way, and, you know, and we'll get to where he was feuding with AJ Styles here at the end, but where were you with the character, and how do you have him? Because we both did that top 10 on Facebook, and I don't think either one of us had Undertaker on our list.
That's true. I was a huge, I was such a big Stone Cold mark, because he was so cool, and Undertaker was always kind of against him, and they did the corporate ministry thing, and he kind of hung Stone Cold, and, you know, all that. Yeah. So, growing up as a fan, I was always kind of against him. Mm-hmm. I was huge into Stone Cold, and then him and The Rock did some stuff. When I was, 9 or 10, I went to St. Louis, and he wrestled. And it was a house show. I remember he was kind of creepy then. They turned the lights off, and I can remember I went with a group of people, but my old Little League baseball coach, his name's Dan Egg. He had a daughter named Danielle, and I remember she was there, and we were talking about it at school, and she had cried and ran off when The Undertaker came out. And she was in my grade, she graduated with me. Her brother was a year below us, so we were on the same ball team, and his dad was our coach, but I can remember us making fun of her because she had ran. So I was never really scared of him, but however, as performer-wise, he was one of the people I told Red Daniels to watch. I said, watch Kane, watch Undertaker. For me, as a wrestler, I never watched him because I'm not 6'10", 300 pounds. So I was never going to work that style. But anyway, as far as watching, I always enjoyed it. I always felt like he was in good storylines. You got to remember, when the American Badass came out, I was a high school kid, so it was cool. You know, the Kid Rock song was cool, Limp Bizkit was cool, so I kind of dug that, you know, because, you know, I was playing rolling in my car.
Yeah.
And so when he came out, that was kind of cool to me. I remember we had a basketball camp. We brought our own little portable CD or portable CD player to play, and one of the songs was American Badass, and that was on there, and that was his music, so it was cool to me. It was like, okay, this guy's cool. So, I thought it was neat, I liked the motorcycle coming out on it. I thought that was kind of cool at that time, so... But as far as a fan, I never rooted for him. There was never a time when I was like, you know. Now, as obviously, as I got into wrestling and became a wrestler and started watching for different reasons, definitely 100% I got into him. However, you know, as a fan growing up, I was Stone Cold through and through. Mm-hmm. Then I was The Rock through and through. And so... I was never going to root for him because he was always, and obviously I was a Triple H mark, so I was never rooting for him.
talk to me about the loyalty aspect, because as we mentioned, 30 years, he never left. You know, the Monday Night War happened. The Undertaker stayed tried and true to Vince McMahon and to the WWF. You know, even all these years later, you know, he's in his mid-50s now, and this is going to branch off into another question, but I want to get your take on the loyalty and the, you know, the fans obviously got behind him very early on, and he stayed, like I said, at the top. You know, we never really saw the Undertaker. He obviously put over talent and helped grow talent, but we never saw him as that guy who, you know, like a Ric Flair, who was at the top of the mountain, and then as he kind of went downhill, he's putting everybody over. So what do you think it is about him and that relationship with Vince McMahon, and maybe part of the insight is into the Last Ride series that WWE Network did, but what do you attribute that kind of loyalty and staying power and staying so close to the top of the card?
I mean, when you watch that Last Ride thing, like, and you hear his wife talk, there are certain people that when I started wrestling, that I, like, gravitated to as far in the back. And so when I'm watching that, I'm laughing because I hear him talk, and I'm sure the Red Daniels and the Garrett, you know, Dixie Roswells and the Scott, they're all laughing because I have the same mentality he does, to where it's like Larry Madison, you know. But the first time I went up there, I told this story before, I wanted to get booked there. And I had reached out, and it was Chris Hargis, made some calls and pulled some strings and got me in. And, you know, I really wanted to work for Larry. And I sat down with Larry, and Larry said, look, you got two kids. You can squash one and beat him in 3 minutes, or you can work in the main event against Ken Casa, who's going to win the belt next month. And you're going to have to put him over, though. And Larry's like, but I'll make you $1 million, and I'll take care of you, and I'll book you from here on out. And I did it, and I became so loyal to Larry that whatever Larry asked me to do, because I respected him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like, and then I met people through them and through that company that, you know, sent me other Brandon Espinosa, all these people that I met, and they, and it sent me places, OVW and you know, places in Tennessee that I branched off through that place that help me out. So with that being said, when you watch not the Last Ride, but when you watch Undertaker on the Stone Cold podcast, he said when Vince called him, he was broke. He didn't know what he was going to do. He didn't have money. And he was like, I didn't care what Vince asked me to do. I was going to do it because he needed the money. He was so thankful. With that being said, like, loyalty goes, like, such a long way, I think, in this business. And, you know, it's like, I know if I'm booked, if I have a show booked, and let's say Kevin Huntsberger has one booked in Carterville, I know that a shadow of a doubt, Axe Allworth's going to come to my show. He's going to call me, and he's going to, and I know it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there's that loyalty. And when you're booking champions or you're booking storylines, those are the people that you put first. And there were times when there were other companies that were, you know, running the same time we were, and people, oh, I'm going to go there. And I'll, you know, that's fine. That, you know how I am. Go, you know, go wherever you want to go. But there's that certain, when I'm booking a show, and I know there's certain things I know Axe Allworth is going to come to this show.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be loyal to me. And so when everybody was going to WCW and stuff, and everybody was jumping ship, it was always the ones that you had read horror stories about.
Right.
You know, that were like, I want to win. I want this. I want that. I honestly always felt like Undertaker just was happy to have a job. He was happy to work, and he was happy to work for Vince. Vince was his friend. Vince took care of him, and it, you know, and I, and you know, like another person, like the Big Show, when he was on Stone Cold, saying he talked about that, like, I was just happy to work. Whatever mm-hmm. Vince wanted me to do, you know, it's fake. It's not a real fight. You know, whatever you need me to do, I'm going to do it. And Undertaker, he just seems like, when you hear his wife talk too, he's just, you know, he's so loyal. And I think there are certain people in the business that you, there's only like, well, we've talked about on this podcast, they'll backstab you in a heartbeat. I mean, mm-hmm. they'll throw you under the gut. I mean, it's a very, very sketchy, cutthroat business, and people lie behind your back. And so I think when you got somebody you trust and you know they got your back, and, you know, we've heard things that Vince has done, sketchy things to people, and but Undertaker trusted him, and right. he believed him, and, you know, and it, I feel like loyalty goes, you know, I mean, I think, you know, if you're about to get beat up, you're probably going to call me, and I'm going to fight for you and then ask what happened later. And I mean, I just feel like there's only a handful of people in your life, everybody, and I think that Undertaker and Vince have that relationship where it's like he has my back. He mm-hmm. like he
yeah, that makes a lot of sense. From a performer standpoint, though, I really didn't think about this, and I think it came up during the course of The Last Ride, and or it may have been on a podcast where I heard this analogy, but, you know, I always thought for the last, I don't know, 8 or 10 years that it's been that we've only really seen Undertaker pop up at WrestleMania, and then he may do a show in Saudi Arabia, or he'll come out and do a special appearance or whatever, but, you know, you could count on one hand how many times he's actually in the ring wrestling each year. And I thought that that might be a little easier. You know, he's in his 50s, as we said. He's 6'10", 300-plus pounds. So, you know, to have that kind of longevity is amazing in and of itself. But somebody, I think made the remark that he is taking so much time off that it takes longer to get ready and as opposed to being on the road and doing, and I know that you haven't had that kind of schedule before, but would you say that it's better to kind of keep in there and keep going on versus taking, you know, a year off from time to time where there's a whole year in between your last match? Because, you know, I would imagine it does impact and have an effect on your body where you're not in there all the time taking those bumps, and that first bump back in is probably a wake-up call.
It's very hard. Like, the longer you go between matches, I mean, you know, just recently at the taping, Mitch Blake talked about that, mm-hmm. you know. And you, the longer you go without wrestling, the harder it is on your body when you start wrestling. It jerks your body. It hurts. It, you may bump wrong and hit you, like, you know, a couple weeks ago or a month ago, I was wrestling and I hit my elbow taking a bump and it was sore for like 2 weeks. I mean, it hurt. Like, I mean, I couldn't work out. It literally, and it was just something like, and it's from not bumping enough, mm-hmm. not having your timing, not, you know, getting up quick enough, you know, stuff like that. So yeah, so the longer you go without, I mean, it's a timing issue. It's a card. There's nothing like ring shape, you know, and, you know, I mean, Edge just got hurt, you know,
right.
And that was his first real match in how long, you know? And so it's having your timing, the way you land, the way you bump, when you try to wrestle in big, huge faces, you know, it's harder. It's so much harder on your body, and it's so much harder to get used to because, I mean, if you're bumping 10 times a day, you've got that timing down, you got that cardio, your body's used to it, you're falling, you're hitting at the right time, and you're getting up at the right time, you're in the right place, and You know, like, I mean, I go back to Undertaker and Roman Reigns, like, you're watching The Last Ride, and he's like, oh, my God, I can't even, you know, I'm so out of it, I can't even get in the right place mm-hmm. for the spear at the end. I don't even know, because, I mean, you're out of it, and, you know, it makes me laugh. I told the trainees, I just told them this, you know, the other day. I said, you know, when you watch a boxing match, and, you know, I mean, Floyd Mayweather versus McGregor, and he's wailing on McGregor. You watch, and anybody who's getting beat up, they're trying to get away. And it's because they don't know where they are. They're just trying to get away to gather their thoughts. Well, in wrestling, you know, you take a bump and your head's rattled, your head bounces off the mat. It's the same thing. However, you got to get up and feed to take something else. And if somebody clocks you with a forearm, if your head bounces off the mat, if you, like Goldberg, you hit your head on a turnbuckle and knock yourself silly, there, I mean, it's not like a boxing match or MMA match where they can just call it. You know, that's, yeah. And it's the same thing. And so, yes, it is harder because you're not in the shape and you don't have the mind or the ability to, you know, to recover.
Well, over the course of his 30-year career in WWE, he was a 7-time heavyweight champion, whether it was the WWE Championship or the World Heavyweight title. He's won the Royal Rumble. He's held the WWE Tag Team Championships with multiple partners, 6 different title reigns there, including Kane, Rock, Big Show, and Stone Cold Steve Austin. But probably his biggest legacy, oh, and he's won the Royal Rumble as well. Probably his biggest legacy will obviously be the WrestleMania streak, which up until 2014, every time he competed at WrestleMania, he won, starting back in 1991. And in 2014, he loses to Brock Lesnar. So the streak goes to 21-1. Was it a good idea to end the streak? I was there at the Superdome, rather, when it happened, and I can remember a collective air letting out in the building, and how amazing that crowd reaction was. I was disappointed. Like I said, I wasn't a huge Undertaker fan, but I was disappointed to see the streak end. However, I've thought about it through the years, and I almost view it now as kind of that passing of the torch, like Andre the Giant did with Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 3. So obviously we build these records up, but then really to make them even more significant, I think you do sometimes have to have something to hang your hat on with it, whether it is passing that torch or raising the next superstar up to the next level.
I mean, again, I'm a nobody, so I have no insight or no, you know, I firmly believe that it was his choice.
Yeah.
So, and I think because you had the whole thing, Undertaker at the UFC thing, and they had the talk or whatever. I honestly believe that Undertaker handpicked him to beat the streak.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I could be wrong. I could be way off. It could be. But you read, you hear these things where, like the Montreal Screwjob, whenever Vince tells Sean, you tell everybody you didn't know and it was me. I'll take the fall. You tell everybody. I just got a feeling that it could be the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Vince tells Undertaker, you tell people it was my call. I'll take, you know, because people aren't going to like it. Mm-hmm. People are going to be upset.
Right.
And that's the vibe that I get. Just based off of their relationship, Undertaker went. When Brock Lesnar was out, it was obvious Undertaker wanted to work with him. And I'm a firm believer in it. And I think Undertaker wanted to end it. I think he, you know, they wanted to have that moment. And since then, I mean, Brock Lesnar's been really the face of the company.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really. I mean, they've built everything around him. And so I do think I don't think Roman Reigns should have beat him. I'm more frustrated with that than I was Undertaker, because it was cool to have the one behind the 21-1 or the whatever.
Right.
When after Roman Reigns beat him, you kind of don't have that anymore. So I don't, Roman Reigns, I don't felt like needed that rub. So he already got enough.
Yeah.
But that's here nor there. But anyway, no, I was fine with an ending. I was fine with an ending. The Brock Lesnar, because it really seemed like they wanted to do something with him, and they have. They kind of
right.
He's been the guy. So
it wasn't a wasted thing, which it very easily could have become that. But they really did utilize Brock Lesnar. You know, Brock Lesnar's 2014 after that was full steam ahead. He made John Cena his bitch at SummerSlam, and then, you know, had that dominant championship run. So, and I don't know that it would have been as effective had he not beaten The Undertaker at WrestleMania. So do you think, though, that should have been it for The Undertaker? Should he have retired then? You know, because then we see him come back and face Bray Wyatt and John Cena and then, of course, Roman Reigns.
So that's my thing, is I'm like, I'm never going to say somebody should, I'm not like, It kind of makes me mad that people tweet or post that or say that. Like, Undertaker, like, the dude has killed himself, and you see on the last ride all the surgeries he had, all the stuff he missed with his kid, all the stuff he's missed with his wife. Like, he has earned, if he wants to go out and wrestle and have a crappy match, he's earned that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I firmly believe that. And I'm like, if people that don't wrestle and have never wrestled, you don't get it. And there's no feeling like it in the world. Even, you know, I'm not making fun of you by any means.
Right.
But I can remember a podcast that you did where you cried on it after having a match in Pinckneyville in front of, you know, 400 people.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that, like, that feeling that you get. And, like, there's so many times you have a match and, you know, you'd have one, you know, I'd be in Georgia or I'd be somewhere and I'd have this match that was amazing. And you want to cry on the way home
mm-hmm.
because of how good it made you feel. And that's kind of how I feel with Undertaker. Like, there's no feeling like it. And, like, to me, it's like if I walked away and retired, I would miss it. I would miss that feeling. And then, I mean, and not to put myself over, but being in a WWE ring, like, that crowd, that atmosphere, those lights, that feeling, like, I mean, it's like, whoa, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's, there's just nothing like it. So I couldn't imagine doing that all the time for 30 years and then being like, I'm done. And there was actually a Scott Hall documentary that ESPN did years ago where they asked him, you know, why he still struggled. And he said, every day you have 30,000 people chanting your name. What do you do when they stop chanting it?
Mm.
And so he had said that, and like, he was like, I've struggled because I need that feeling. And I'm never going to say, yes, he should retire. Yes. I mean, in my opinion, the best match of all time was Undertaker and Shawn Michaels, the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Hands down, I think that's the greatest wrestling match of all time.
Mm.
And I know, like, Steamboat and Macho Man, Hogan and Andre, there's all these great matches. But I think that's the greatest match of all time. So I think if I was to be like, Undertaker should have retired, like, if there was a match I could have picked, it would have been that one.
Yeah.
Because I don't think you're ever going to top that. Like, you're never going to have that again. Because, I mean, that was so, so rare. And I mean, it was just I don't know what your stance is on that match, but that's my stance.
You know, it was, I was there for it. And again, I, No, and I'm not saying that, yeah, I guess I'm humble bragging, but I was never a huge, here's the thing, I'm probably an anomaly with a lot of wrestling fans, because I was not a huge Shawn Michaels fan either. I liked Shawn, I liked The Undertaker, but I wasn't, like, they weren't my two favorites. You know, I was a bigger fan of the Shawn Michaels-Ric Flair match because of, obviously, my love of Ric Flair. But, you know, the Undertaker-Shawn Michaels match was a great match. And I do like the first one better than the one that Shawn ended up retiring with. So, I would definitely put it up there as one of the great rivalries and matches for WrestleMania and a great overall match in general. And I know a lot of people just recently went back and rewatched it when they aired it. But do you, and as we kind of wrap things up, I know you kind of gave your opinion on retirement, but since he has said he is retiring, do you think, because we see it happen all the time, and after you explain it, and, you know, and even though I've only done it a handful of times, I get that adrenaline, that rush, and you know, it's different being in there announcing versus being in there and actually wrestling, or, you know, having a match. I shouldn't say wrestling, because that's not what I'm doing, but, you know, do you think The Undertaker will have another match before it's all said and done, or was the Boneyard match with AJ it, and if it is it, was that a high note to go out on?
I my personal opinion, I think he'll have two more.
Okay.
I think he will wrestle AJ Styles again.
Mm-hmm.
And only why I say that is AJ makes jabs and says stuff I think they want to have it in front of a crowd,
mm-hmm.
an actual wrestling match. I think, you know, on the mark, I think AJ is the best in the world right now. I think AJ is somebody who, like, I think AJ can give him what Shawn gave him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And those first two. I think Shawn came back when they did the DX versus the Brothers of Destruction.
Uh-huh.
Shawn hadn't wrestled in so long, and he wasn't that person anymore. I think now AJ's that person. AJ is Shawn at that age. Can go with anybody. You know, I mean, he made Ric Flair look like $1 million at that age.
Yeah.
I think Shawn or AJ will give him an amazing match. I think Undertaker wants that match. But I think, I don't think Undertaker said he was retired. I mean, I know he said, like, but he made the comment, you know, Vince calls. I think he's leaving it open mm-hmm. for AJ. And I do think we're going to get Sting and Undertaker. I do. I firmly believe it. And I believe it because my thought process on it is not that WWE is hurting for money, but they have lost a lot of money
mm-hmm.
during this COVID thing. They've let a ton of people go. I think WrestleMania next year, hopefully, we can have a crowd. Like, I mean, there's nothing you can put on a marquee or sell that would be bigger than that.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you did, you know, like Stone Cold came back and Stone Cold was going to wrestle somebody, or you did Rock versus Roman.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know what would sell more than Undertaker and Sting. I mean, I think so many people would buy a ticket to go watch that. And I think that's going to be Vince's, I see Sting tweeted something, and I think wrestlers do that. They put that out there. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. look at CM Punk. I mean, he right. was, I hate wrestling. I want nothing to do with wrestling.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden he did the StarCast where he talked about wrestling, and then he made sure he said he had no problems with WWE, that he was behind it. And then he made, you know, tweets about it, and that, like, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that he was more open to, you know, that. And I think Sting was the same way. He had really hadn't made any WWE type post. And then here lately, he's tweeted, you know, stuff about Undertaker. And I think he's putting feelers out there, like, you know. And no, people that are listening, like, I do not think CM Punk's coming back to wrestle or was wanting WWE to come back to wrestle. I meant he was finally, like, I think he had such a hatred toward wrestling that he, you know, was finally able to be like, okay, you know, like, you know, like he said, you know, I mean, I remember he gave a thing. He said the greatest sign of his life is when he got married and when he had his UFC fight. And here we are talking about CM Punk. But anyway, that's...
I saw him wrestle The Undertaker, too. Just throwing that out there.
Any other matches you want to put yourself over?
No, I'm good.
So that's my next goal. Me and you are going to go to WrestleMania together.
There you go. There you go.
I'm not dressing up.
Okay, so that's fine.
You and Chad can... dress up and do whatever. And
all right, we'll put that on our bucket list. But I agree. I do think I can see the Sting thing happening, and definitely see the AJ Styles thing as well. So I appreciate your insight and you joining us once again on this week's episode. And friends, I invite you to not only download this podcast, but follow along, leave a review over wherever you're listening to it, and that'll help get the word out to even more folks. And be sure to check out strideprowrestling.com. That'll link you to all of our social media accounts. Everyone, thanks for listening, and have a great week.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.